Hi, thanks for joining. Please make sure you subscribe to follow us on all the various platforms here on the podcast, as well as on YouTube, the stuff we write on Substack, as well as quick takes on Instagram and on Threads. If you're enjoying what we're putting out there, please make sure you're sharing with all your friends and family. And if you have questions or comments about the stuff we're putting out there, please make sure you leave them in comments to us. We'd be more than happy to cover them in future talks.
We've heard it over and over and over again. We need to get our steps in each day. And a lot of other sayings that are meant to encourage us to be active and to participate in endurance activities and endurance exercise, what a lot of people might call cardio. But what is it that's going to actually lead to a lot of the changes that we're hoping to make by doing these cardio exercises, by doing these endurance exercises? We all know the claims that running is great for weight loss because it's going to, quote, burn more calories. And as we've pointed out a number of times, the idea surrounding calories and weight is not true, even though this is the biggest claim when we start looking at the idea surrounding the need to get your steps in a day, the need to be active, the need to do the quote-unquote cardio. But how true are all these claims? What's taking place in our body in response to these types of exercises? And do we need to run? Do we need to do all of the various types of exercises that are being prescribed to us in order to get the same responses that we might get from doing weight training, that we might get from doing other types of exercise, other types of activities that we might prefer more often? Well, let's talk about that.
Warning. The following presentation contains information that might contradict what you have previously heard or believed to be true about how the human body works, and contains material that is not suitable for closed-minded individuals. Enjoy.
When we start looking at the recommendations for exercise for activity as it relates to changes in cardiovascular health, as it relates to changes in weight and weight loss, a lot of ideas come about in terms of the need to expend calories in exercise. What we have to remember is that adage is not true. The idea about weight loss coming from caloric deficit is a misnomer. Weight loss does not come from a single episode, but from a change in metabolism that comes about from changes in hormones that are going to regulate our body and regulate our body's metabolism. Changes that can only come from doing something repeatedly, causing stresses to the body, and those stresses to the body leading to the ultimate weight loss that we're looking at. We start looking at changes in cardiovascular health, we're looking at needing to cause stresses that lead to dynamic changes in the way in which the heart functions, and the way in which the blood functions, and the way in which the blood vessels function that improve overall performance of that cardiovascular fitness, of the cardiovascular system. In order to get this repeated episode, which is very important, we have to make sure that exercise is self-selected, which is where when we start looking at these claims about, oh, you need to run, we always hear these statements. I hate running. Running hurts my knees. Running is horrible for my knees. Those are just a few of the complaints that get thrown around whenever the discussion about jogging or running comes up. And these should not be ignored. When we're looking at needing to make lifestyle changes and hope for these changes to become long-term, they need to be self-selected and self-monitored, not coerced. And for a lot of people who express this opinion, the idea about running, the idea about jogging is not going to be self-selected. However, the more active those individuals become, they may start self-selecting towards running. They may start self-selecting towards jogging when they first started doing their change in lifestyle, they would not self-select towards that. They would self-select towards lifting weights or doing some sort of gym routine that is exercise that is not going to be what is typically thought about as quote-unquote cardio or quote-unquote endurance exercise or quote-unquote aerobic exercise. We start looking at what type of exercise we're going to be dealing with that's going to provide benefits to weight loss and to cardiovascular health. Any type of exercise will do both. If we look at the meta-analytical studies that are out there, some that I've published over a decade ago now, we look at the reference for exercise and the responses that we get from exercise and the cardiometabolic responses that we get from resistance training can be as good, if not better, than what we get from endurance training, where everybody thinks about as aerobic or cardio, put quotes around those. The combination of resistance exercise and endurance exercise within an exercise routine actually gives us the best of both worlds in terms of appeasing the person that wants us to exercise and appeasing ourselves in terms of self-selection towards exercise. So even though resistance training is great for resolving a lot of health issues and for improving overall function, improving overall performance, it's important that we cannot rely solely on these resistance exercises, this non-endurance exercise, to provide the means by which we can become healthier. So let's go ahead and let's talk about some of the other means of exercise that we can do that would fit into what people think about as cardio or as aerobic. Look at how we can use those in terms of our exercise modality, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about what's physiologically taking place that's going to allow for these changes to occur. When we start looking at this, there are about five or six different types of modes of exercise that we can look at that would be deemed cardio in the vein of what we look at in terms of what is cardiovascularly beneficial. We start looking at what's cardiovascularly beneficial. We're talking about changes in the way in which the heart is pumping blood around the body, the way in which the blood vessels are going to deal with changes in blood pressures, as well as how much blood is there for the individual at any moment in time. And there's some adaptations that will take place, which we'll talk about after we get through the types of exercises that we can do. One of the more common types of exercises that are used as a mode of, quote, cardio is what's referred to as interval training. The idea around interval training is to use bouts of exercise followed by rest periods, which means we're going to sporadically change the intensity of the exercise that we're doing. In the modes and in the models expressed in the gym, this is usually following something referred to as a HIIT, H-I-T-T, that HIIT, the HIIT training, H-I-I-T, high intensity interval training. That HIIT training is popular because it tends to be excessively short duration in terms of what we're doing in exercise. Because it's short duration, it's something that is appealing in terms of time management, but it's also strenuous enough that it makes us feel like we're working out, but not makes us feel like we're running. A lot of times the reason why people don't like running a lot is simply because most of the running programs that are out there or running protocols that are prescribed are sometimes long, slow, and boring, whereas the interval training does not allow this to happen. The popular HIIT training, the popular high-intensity interval training, is the pattern that we typically think about when we start thinking about interval training. But interval training can be any type of endurance activity, whether it is endurance activity where we're out walking, endurance activity where we're doing weight training, endurance activity where we're on the treadmill, endurance activity where we're on the stair stepper, anything that we're doing where we're moving, where we're going to change our level of intensity. Most of the times, these are prescribed levels of time and prescribed levels of endurance, where you can be doing maximal efforts for 5 to 8 seconds, followed by a recovery of 2 to 3 minutes, followed by maximal efforts of 5 to 8 minutes, excuse me, 5 to 8 seconds, followed by a recovery for 2 minutes. And in some cases, these can be maximal efforts for 5 to 8 seconds, followed by a 60-second, a 1 minute recovery, followed by maximal effort for 5 to 8 seconds, followed by a recovery for 1 minute. There are other ones where you're going to be doing intensities for 60 to 90 seconds, followed by recoveries of 1 to 3 minutes. There's a whole host of various types of interval programs that are out there. I've put a link in the descriptor for a catalog that I have online for types of interval trainings and types of circuit training that you can do that are going to provide the endurance aspect to training without having to make you want to go run or make you have to go run, I should say. Most of the interval trainings, once again, are typically very short in duration. Some can be as short as 5 to 15 minutes and provide the same type of cardiorespiratory benefit and cardiometabolic benefit that we would get from the excessively long duration exercises. For people who don't like to do prescribed exercise, who like to do kind of, I'm going to do what I want to do because I want to do it, there is a form of interval training out there known as fartlek, F-A-R-T-L-E-K. Fartlek is comes from Scandinavia, and it's basically free run is the term. And what you're doing is you're simply, for no prescribed time limits for either exertion or recovery, you're going to simply go and you're going to change the pace and change the level of intensity that you're working at. You can do this in a walk. You can do this in a jog. You can do this on an elliptical machine. For people who have any type of knee, hip, ankle issues, I recommend listening to the discussion that we did on the difference between running and elliptical machines in terms of the stresses that are on the knee and stresses that are on the hip, because there's not the benefit that people claim about the elliptical versus the treadmill versus running or walking outside is not as clear as what people say in terms of the types of forces that are being placed on the joints and the wear and tear that can take place because of the way in which those forces are being placed. So we have interval training, whether it's the prescribed intervals or whether it's simply just doing fartlek training. We also have circuit training. Circuit training is the idea of doing kind of a whole body weight training session. It's done in a style where if we want to make it an endurance activity, we're going to cut back on the rest intervals. And that's the key here in terms of the circuit training. If we want to make it a strength episode, we're going to have long intervals. If we're going to make it an endurance activity, we're going to have short intervals. But here's the thing, it doesn't matter in terms of cardiometabolic responses. Yes, there are patterns of circuit training that we can do that can maximize cardiometabolic responses and can maximize quote unquote caloric expenditure during the exercise by embedding endurance periods within the circuit. But in terms of cardiovascular responses, we'll get to this when we get to the physiology of what's going on. It doesn't matter whether I'm doing it with very short rest intervals or long rest intervals as if I'm doing strength training. The style of training that we're doing with circuit training is going to provide a metabolic demand that is both resistance and endurance in nature. It's going to stimulate metabolic responses, going to stimulate strength responses within the muscles that are being recruited during the exercise. And because we're recruiting all of the muscles within the body doing large muscle group exercises, we're going to get a full recruitment of all of the muscles of the body during this circuit. The responses that we see will depend upon how we actually set up that circuit in terms of the pattern of recruitment and the mode of adaptations that we are going to see. When we develop the circuit, there are several styles and patterns that can be employed based on what we're attempting to get in terms of the adaptation. The most common one that we see if we go to the gym and look at people doing circuit training in terms of their class is a circuit resistance interval training. And that circuit resistance interval training is a pattern where you're rotating from one large muscle group exercise to another large muscle group exercise with little to no rest within the rotation, where you have at the end of the rotation a small bit of interval training, or within the circuit a small bit of interval training, where once you complete one circuit, you usually have a rest period before you do the next rotation through the circuit. There are other ways that we can look at in terms of these changes within exercise that are endurance style that can get very close to the metabolic demands that we would see in terms of long duration endurance without causing you to feel like you're running. And that's the thing here. A lot of times we start looking at, okay, I hate running, I'm not going to do the treadmill, I'm not going to do the running outside. A lot of it is that psychological aversion to the exercise because we're saying we're going to run. And so we have distinct patterns that we can use on the treadmill. We have distinct patterns that we can use outside where we're going to be doing walking as opposed to running. And so for people who want to start to actually get those steps in, if you want to follow some of the guidelines from the CDC, from the American College of Sports Medicine, from the American Heart Association, from the Diabetes Society, where they keep talking about steps, where the idea about exercise as it relates to improvement of metabolism, as it relates to improvement of body weight and body mass, and they're constantly looking at the aspect of exercise as an endurance activity, as a quote aerobic activity, where they're thinking about this endurance activity, this aerobic activity, as being what you get from doing walking or from doing jogging or running. And so there's different ways that we can, the pattern walking that would provide a greater metabolic stimulus than what we would get from simply walking. Now, walking by itself is an excellent form of activity, particularly for people who have compromised health or for people who have a chronic level of inflammation or for people who are getting older. Because of the demands that walking can provide, if walking is done in the correct environment. And this is where a lot of my students would remember whenever we talk about musculoskeletal health, nervous health, cardiorespiratory health. We talk about, as we age, joining a walking group, because walking is going to provide both the load onto the bones to keep the bones healthy, the recruitment activity within the muscles to keep the muscles healthy, the recruitment activity within the nervous system to keep the nervous system healthy, where as long as we are not simply just walking on the treadmill without a change in the environment, without a need to balance, without a need to control how our body is acting, how our body is moving through space, walking by itself is a great form of activity that can become a great form of exercise if we follow a proper progression within the intensities and durations of walking that we're doing. This is where, unfortunately, because of the change in the economics taking place right now, we're losing some of the areas that we can have for walking, where I would tell all of my students to talk to their parents and their grandparents or the elders within their family and to join the mall walkers. Unfortunately, because of the loss of a lot of the malls, we've lost a lot of these mall walking clubs where they could go ahead and walk within a controlled environment in terms of safety with individuals who are of the same age and near the same physical capacities as they are, where they can go ahead and de-stress through talking and complaining about their kids and their grandkids, the way in which the grandparents and the elders within the families had their parents and their grandparents complain about them, because that's how generations work in terms of the complaint that takes place within families, where you have generations complain about the next generation, and it acts as a de-stressing event, but it also provides the exercise stimulus that is necessary in order to maintain proper musculoskeletal health, proper nervous system health, proper cardiorespiratory health, all simply by walking, as long as we're walking at correct intensities and for appropriate amounts of duration. But I'm going to leave that to the side. When we're looking at changing activity level, where we're looking at making walking into an exercise, we have to look at it in terms of changes of intensity and changes of duration. There are a number of different types of quote-unquote treadmill routines that you can look at that can offer benefits that are similar to what we would see from running, but come from walking. Because once again, we're looking at that psychological aversion where we don't want to run because we hear the word run and it makes us upset. It makes us not want to do the exercise. One of the more famous of, or more, one of the more common of the routines that are out there deals with the treadmill, where you're going to change the incline of the treadmill, but go at a very, very slow speed. The more popular one that's in press right now is sometimes referred to as the 12-1-30 or the 12-3-30. This is where you're going to set the incline of the treadmill at 12, and then you'll have the speed stay the same at either 1 mile per hour or 3 miles per hour for 40 minutes. There are other ways that you can do this. There is sometimes referred to as the 4-4-20. There are sometimes those that are referred to as the 8-4-20. Once again, this is where you're going to set the incline at 8. You're going to go at a speed of 4. And you're going to go from 20 to 40 minutes. Then there are the inclined intervals, where you're going to take the principles of interval training and combine it with these treadmill walking ideas. And this is where you're going to set a baseline incline of, say, like 1 to 2, which would mimic walking, very close mimic to walking on flat tarmac, on flat sidewalk. You're going to set the speed at a pace that you can maintain without changing for 30, 40, 50 minutes without having difficulty. And then you're going to change the incline of the treadmill for short periods of time, usually 1 to 2 minutes in duration, where you're going to go from an incline of 1 to 2 to an incline of 4 to 6 for 1 or 2 minutes, return back to the baseline for 2 to 3 minutes. You're then going to change the incline to 8 to 10 for 1 to 2 minutes, and then return back to baseline for 2 to 3 minutes, and then take it up to, say, 10 to 12 for a minute, and then come back to baseline for 2 to 3 minutes, and you'll simply just repeat those, very similar to repeating intervals. The idea here is that that by increasing the incline of the treadmill, while not ramping up any of the speed of the tread, we're going to see two specific responses that come into play that are based off of the need to have greater amounts of active muscle force being developed. The first is that when I'm walking, I get a lower rate of return from my foot and my ankle to my body to propel itself forward. So as we walk, we're actually stopping ourselves with each step. So if we walk heel to toe, every time my heel hits the ground, I'm actually breaking the body. I'm slowing down. Which means that as I transition onto my toes in order to go to the next step, I then have to go from brake to pause to accelerate. That transition from brake, pause, accelerate means that I have to increase the amount of active muscle recruitment and increase the amount of active muscle within each step. This is different than what we see with running and with jogging. When I run and jog, as long as I don't land on my heel, I get a greater rate of return due to the elastic nature of all of the tendons and ligaments in my foot and my ankle, so that I get a more energetic step, which means that running becomes less energetically demanding than walking at a specific speed of walking. This is where we have that transition phase from a walk to a fast walk to a jog to a run. When we make that transition, we make those transitions, it's transitions taking place based off of the energy return, the need to dissipate that energy return within the gait, within the pattern of walking. And there's an actual inversion point that takes place, and it takes place at different speeds for each individual and at different inclines for each individual in terms of the ramp angle that you're having to propel your body up, walk up, run up. Now, the other thing that comes into play here is that because I have an incline that I'm walking on, I have to have greater amounts of core muscle activity in order to stabilize, so that I don't fall over. This is where, if I'm going to do these treadmill activities at these various inclines, I cannot hold on to the machine. And this is where we have to be very careful, because if I have any type of musculoskeletal issue, nervous issue, cardiorespiratory issue, where I'm not quite healthy enough to do these inclines, I can't be at these very high inclines because I'll be holding on to the machine, at which point in time I start to lose some of the benefit from doing these incline activities. This idea about increase at muscle activity leads to or kind of parallels that misconception about the caloric demand that takes place within the exercise. And the fact that the weight loss and all the changes that take place is because of the change in the amount of energy that is being required, the amount of quote unquote calories that are being expended. Everybody says calories burned, but we know that calories can't be burnt. And so when we start looking at this idea about the walking, we have to remember that there's going to be that transition point where it actually becomes more energetically demanding to walk than it does to run. If you ever watch the speed walkers, like at the Olympics, the speed walking people, they're expending so much energy controlling their gait so that they don't go into a run. Because there's a difference between walking and running in terms of gait, where walking, you always have 1 foot on the ground, 1 foot in the air during what's referred to as the step cycle. Whereas in running, there's what's referred to as a flight phase. And the faster I run, the greater the flight phase happens to be. Whereas when I'm walking, I don't have a flight phase at all. And so I'm constantly slowing myself down and then speeding myself up in order to maintain the pace that I want to walk at, which is where if I'm going to be outside doing these interval walks, I want to try to walk as fast as possible without going into a jog or a run. That's the key here in terms of doing these walkings in terms of intervals, where we're going to walk because we don't like the idea about running. Now, the other way that we can look at in terms of walking to walk as opposed to doing any type of exercise outside, and this is the key here. This one's going to be outside. Yes, you can do it on the treadmill. This looks kind of weird on the treadmill, at least from my personal opinion. And that's what's referred to as rucking, R-U-C-K-I-N-G. So rucking simply means walking with some sort of backpack, a rucksack, where we usually look at this in terms of walking with a weighted pack. For some people, you might see them in the gym or out on some of the fitness trails with weighted vests on. But you don't have to go and spend the money on the weighted vest. A simple book bag with books in them will do. And the idea behind this is that by adding weight to the body, we're going to make the exercise more metabolically demanding. We're going to cause greater amounts of muscle recruitment, which means we're going to start getting overload within the muscles in terms of adaptations taking place. That's true. There is a point at which this integration of mechanical overload and work overload starts to drop. And that's as the muscles and the body starts to get adapted to the training, where we actually have to increase the weight of the ruck in order to see continuous adaptations from rucking. We have to put more books into the book bag. We have to have a heavier weighted vest, or we have to increase the speed at which we're walking, or we have to go for longer durations of time, or we have to start going up inclines. So those are the types of exercises that we can do that are going to counteract the negative attitude that we have towards running, that we can get endurance benefits from, that we can get cardiorespiratory benefits from. The idea that we look at when we start looking at this kind of change in response based off of either using intervals or doing circuit training or doing either the walk trainings at the various inclines or doing rucking, what we're looking at doing is we're looking at changing cellular responses within the muscles. And those cellular responses within the muscles is going to lead to changes in the mitochondria. And by changes in the mitochondria, we're going to change different types of metabolic enzymes. We're going to change fuel utilization, where we'll start to increase lipid use, fat use for fuels. We're going to start to experience ischemic factors within the muscles, where early on, or as we start to change the levels of intensity, and this is where we have to look at the difference between exercise and activity, where exercise is going to trigger these ischemic factors as well as trigger enzymatic changes in order to meet variable demands in energy, variable demands in mechanical force, variable demands in recruitment throughout the time that we're doing the exercise. But what we're looking at doing is we're looking at trying to change signals coming from the cells to the mitochondria, signals coming from the cells to the cardiorespiratory system through these ischemic factors, through changes in enzymes such as creatine kinase, such as AMPK, such as PPARs, such as MIFs, ischemic factors. And what they're going to do is they're going to trigger a couple things. In the cells, what they're going to do is they're going to trigger a process known as mitochondrial biogenesis. This mitochondrial biogenesis is going to increase the amount of mitochondria available for the cells. And by increasing the amount of mitochondria available for the cells, it's going to allow the cells to become more aerobic. It's going to allow for the muscles to do activity for longer periods of time. It's going to allow the heart muscles to contract for longer periods of time. It's going to allow us to increase our level of endurance. And this takes place independent of whether we are doing resistance training or doing endurance training, whether we're doing quote-unquote cardio or whether we're doing quote-unquote weights. It doesn't matter which type of exercise form we're doing, we're going to get these benefit changes. We're going to get these beneficial changes as long as we work out, as long as we exercise at intensities that are going to cause changes in those hormones. They're going to cause changes in those cellular signals. That's going to lead to changes in the way in which the mitochondria are being regulated. Now, a lot of times we start looking at this idea about endurance, about this idea of needing to do these types of activities for weight loss, for cardiometabolic responses. People will start talking about the fact that we need to do this so that we get a cardio benefit. And the cardio benefit that they talk about is surrounded by this misconception that the changes that are going to take place is because of a need for oxygen. And that's not true. It's an incorrect association that the purpose that we have for breathing, the purpose that we have for changes in heart rate, the purpose that we have for changes in the way in which the cardiorespiratory system is functioning is because of oxygen. We breathe not for oxygen, we breathe to get rid of waste products. The actual cause and effect for breathing is not oxygen, and it's not oxygen in the blood. Yes, we'll get to the oxygen in the blood here in a second. The reason why we breathe, the cause and effect for breathing is because of a buildup of things that we have to get rid of. Carbon dioxide, metabolic acids, that we have to eliminate so that we can maintain homeostasis. When we start talking about people, or when people start talking about changes in heart rate and changes in breathing because of the need for oxygen, because there's less oxygen in certain parts of the blood where we have deoxygenated blood and oxygenated blood, here's the thing. There's always oxygen in the blood. The difference is the concentration of oxygen that happens to be there. And so when we start looking at, okay, why do we get heart rate changes? Why do we get breathing changes as we do these exercises? And why do we get the adaptations that we get in our cardiorespiratory health from doing these quote unquote cardio exercises, from doing these endurance exercises, from doing any exercise? The reason why we're getting these changes is because of a series of integrated responses within the body due to metabolic activity. We have all those enzymes, the AMPK, the CK, the MIFs, all of those factors. We have a whole bunch of enzymes within the cells, within the mitochondria that are all about making sure that we have the correct amount of energy for the cell to do its activity. Whenever we talk about energy, it's always about a molecule known as ATP. Even though everybody talks about energy coming from the sugars in our diet and from the fats in our diet, those are just fuel sources. Those are not the energy sources for the body. The only thing the body can use for energy is ATP. And this is where we have to make sure that our exercise intensities and our exercise durations are correct in order to stress the body enough in order to get changes in the enzymatic pathways, in the pathways that cause the body to create enough ATP to utilize the fuel sources that we have stored if we're looking at attempting to lose weight. It's nothing about calories. It's about the fuel sources. It's about the fuel availability. When we start looking at this idea about why do we get the cardio responses that we get? Why do we get the metabolic responses that we get? It's all about this balance between the fuel availability that I have and the fuel utilization that I'm using. When we start to change how hard we're doing things, we shift from a very effective energy source, a very effective energy pathway, a very effective fuel utilization pathway, the aerobic pathway, which will use a lot of lipids that will, for its bang for the buck, if you want to think about this way, it's going to provide more ATP per unit of fuel when we're doing stuff at lower intensities. As we start to increase the intensity of exercise, we start to shift away from that very efficient aerobic pathway to a less efficient anaerobic pathway. So the aerobic pathway is the pathway where we're able to utilize the oxygen in the body. The anaerobic pathway is where we're going to not necessarily need oxygen in order to get the pathways to go. That pathway, that anaerobic pathway, is less efficient. The body does not like being low in its efficiency. It wants to be a very efficient machine. And so the adaptation that we see metabolically is to get us back to being efficient, which means that we're going to cause changes in all of those pathways to allow us to become more aerobic. And it doesn't matter whether we're doing aerobic classes, whether we're doing cardio classes, whether we're doing cardio exercises, put quotes around all those, or whether we're lifting weights. We're going to cause changes metabolically that's going to make us more metabolically efficient, more aerobic in our metabolism for taking our fuels, our carbohydrates, our lipids, our proteins, and converting fuels into usable energy sources such as ATP. When we're doing this, we're going to see changes in metabolic heat production as we go from being efficient to inefficient. Laws of thermodynamics. We cannot create energy. We cannot destroy energy. All we can do is convert energy from one form to another. And the laws of thermodynamics tell me that the energy at the beginning has to be equal to the energy at the end. And if there's less energy in the molecules, that means that the energy that's not there in the molecules is lost into the environment. It's lost into the environment either through sound, through light, through energy waves such as heat, which is why when we exercise, our body temperature rises. Our body temperature rises because of the additional heat that we're producing from our metabolism, from becoming less efficient, along with the mechanical loss of energy that comes about from the muscle contractions. We're building up heat. And here's the thing, we don't like being hot. And we have kind of an internal air conditioner, if you want to think about it, or an internal radiator, which is actually the better way of thinking about this. And those are all the blood vessels in our skin. And what's going to happen is that as we start to exercise, we're going to start to pump blood out towards the skin more. We're going to start pumping more blood out towards the skin in order to get rid of that built-up heat. That's going to leave us with less blood available in order to go to all of the other places that we need to go. So we're going to have to start to shunt blood from one spot of the body to another spot of the body because we only have so much blood, roughly about 8% of our body mass, if you want to think about it that way, for an average adult, around 5 liters, give or take. But as I'm exercising, I have to make that 5 liters of fluid moving around my body by my heart look like 5.5 or 6 or 6.5 or 10. And at very, very strenuous levels, somewhere up to 20 to 30 liters of blood. But I can't add blood to my body while I'm exercising unless I'm going to try to blood dope during the exercise. And so in order to make the amount of blood look more, the heart has to start to contract more often, because I have to get the heat being built up in the body out of the body. And the way in which we do this is through allowing our skin to act like a radiator. And it acts like a radiator in two ways. Number one is that we have this huge amount of network of blood vessels throughout the skin. But the other thing we do is we sweat. And sweating is going to evaporatively cool the body by pulling heat out of the circulating blood within the blood vessels of the skin and allow it to evaporate away. If I am effectively and efficiently cooling my body, I'm not going to see droplets of sweat. However, if I am increasing the exercise intensity the way I should in order to increase the metabolic demand, in order to cause the necessary stress to get a specific adaptation to the demand of exercise, I'm going to see droplets of sweat. I'm going to start seeing water on my skin. And where's that water coming from? It's coming from the blood. Which means that not only am I going to have to make the static 5 liters of blood look greater, but I'm now going to have to make that loss of fluid look even bigger, because I've now gone from 5 liters to 4.9 liters. Which means the heart has to pump even higher. That whole change, the whole change in blood flow going around, is a cardiac shift. That cardiac shift leads to a phenomenon known as cardiac drift. Cardiac drift is where we start seeing elevations in heart rate that is in response to changes in blood flow going around the body, because the heart functions like a hydraulic pump. Now, what ends up happening as we continue to have this repeated episode with exercise, the amount of blood that we actually have in our body actually increases. It increases as a compensation for the need to have more blood during periods of exertion. That is going to cause changes in the way in which the heart is going to function, which is where, if I am physically active, the heart itself starts to enlarge. It starts to have greater volume capacities. That greater volume capacities allows for more blood to be moved each time the heart contracts. This is why, when I'm done doing my exercise, the adaptations I see cardiorespiratorily to exercise is lower heart rate and lower respiration rate. And that's because in the blood, I get more blood cells that can carry gases around. I get more buffers to control for metabolic acids. In the heart, I get a larger volume of the ventricles to move more blood around. Now, the other thing that takes place is within the blood vessels. In the blood vessels, we're going to get changes in the amount of pressure that the blood is exerting on the blood vessels, which is going to cause the blood vessels to have to stretch a little bit more before they return back to their normal size, which is going to change a phenomenon known as compliance. That's the ability for the blood vessel itself to change its diameter. For people who start to exercise, during the exercise, regardless of the type of exercise, we're going to see an increase in blood pressure. After the exercise, regardless of the type of exercise, we're going to start seeing a reduction in blood pressure. This reduction in blood pressure can be catastrophic if the person is doing maximal resistance mechanical overload, where they are bracing the torso through holding their breath, where as soon as I get done with that lift, with that maximal exertion, with that maximal effort, I will drastically drop the amount of pressure being exerted on all of the blood vessels, which can cause my blood pressure to drop and cause me to faint. This is why a lot of physicians are hesitant to recommend people who have any type of hypertension, any type of high blood pressure, to do resistance exercise, to do weight training, because there is a chance for having these drastic changes in blood pressure that can lead to the person passing out. However, the changes that take place in resistance training relative to the changes that take place in endurance training allow for better modifications to blood vessels following the resistance training relative to the endurance training. Which means that we can see better changes in compliance following resistance training than what we can get following the endurance training. The other thing that comes into play within the cardiorespiratory responses that we'll see that lead to improvements in overall cardiovascular health, once again, regardless of the type of exercise that we're doing, comes from those ischemic signals. Now, those ischemic signals will cause us to have more blood and more blood cells, the red blood cells in particular, but will also cause changes in the amount of blood vessel that's available. The amount of blood vessel that's available is going to increase that increase in blood vessels that is coupled with a reduction in the chronic inflammation and stress hormones, in particular, a stress hormone and an inflammation hormone known as C-reactive protein, leads to a reduction in resting peripheral resistance, resting blood pressure. The changes that take place due to changes in the compliance, the resistance that comes from the changes in the diameter of the blood vessel itself, leads to an improvement in atherosclerosis. Once again, it's not based off of me doing, quote, cardio exercise, whether it's running, walking, etc., but simply doing activity, simply doing exercise. Those changes in the blood vessels allow for the blood and for the heart to move more blood with each beat of the heart. That allows for something referred to as stroke volume to go up. It allows for an increase in the ejection fraction from the heart, which is one of the measures that the cardiologists look at in terms of the quote-unquote health of the heart. And all of these changes take place independent of that quote-unquote need for oxygen. It's all about the changes that metabolically take place during exercise, coupled with the changes in the hydraulic pump action of the heart and the need for the body to maintain circulation of fluids to move nutrients from point A to point B, to eliminate metabolic waste generated at point B to point C, or even back to point A, if we want to think about it in terms of the lungs being point A, to cool the body off in order to dissipate additional heat. That whole additional heat issue, the reason why exercise starts to become easier and our fatigue rate drops as we start to adapt to the exercises is because of the metabolic demand of the exercise drops as we start to adapt to the exercise, specific adaptations to those demands, that allows us to stay more efficient in our energetic pathways of getting ATP available to the cells, as well as the recruitment pattern for muscles in order to execute the activities necessary in order to do the exercise. This is where we start getting the differentiation between exercise and activity. Exercise has to have a planned progression to it. We have to have goals that we're trying to meet, demands that are being placed on the body that's causing adaptations to occur, which is different than activity. Activity is simply being active. Yes, we can get metabolic responses to activity. However, we get better metabolic responses to exercise than what we get to activity. When we start looking at these responses, one of the things we have to remember is that it's never about caloric deficits. It's never about calorie balance in terms of, do I need to do running? Do I need to do these high intensity endurance exercises in order to elicit the changes in my body mass that people say I need to make in order to improve my overall health? Body mass, body weight is not an indication of overall health. Changes in body mass, changes in body weight is not an indication of improvement in overall health. There are a variety of ways that we can exercise, that we can go about improving our overall health, independent of weight loss. The focus of exercise should not be reflective of calorie burned, should not be reflective of calories, period. It should be reflective of the physiological demand that is being placed in the body to elicit a hormonal response and a cellular response that leads to improved overall health. The choice of exercise needs to be one that is self-selected and self-monitored, following a pattern of self-motivated selections, not coercions. The self-selection towards gym routines that do not focus on running, that do not focus on jogging, is perfectly okay. The focus towards gym routines related to resistance training or weight training can provide a holistic effect that leads to both the increase of endurance, the increase of cardiorespiratory health, the improvement of cardiometabolic health that the individuals are trying to achieve, that we are trying to achieve. You do not need to jog or to run if you self-select away from jogging or running. Even though people may prescribe it, even though people may ascribe the need to meet endurance demands by jogging or by running, or through the idea that you have to have so many steps completed in a day in order to obtain cardiometabolic benefits from being physically active. Thanks for listening. Hopefully you got a little bit out of the discussion here in terms of, well, I really hate running. What should I do or what can I do? What is the physiological reason for getting the benefits from exercise that I can't get even if I choose not to run or jog in terms of endurance and endurance benefits? If you have questions or comments, just make sure you're leaving those for us. We're more than happy to cover them either in individual discussions or in subsequent talks and discussions, either here on the podcast or on YouTube or in the written forms on Substack or the quick takes that we have on Instagram or on Threads. Please make sure you're following us on all of the various platforms here on the podcast, YouTube, as well as on Instagram and on Threads with the written stuff coming out on Substack, or the books available on Amazon and soon to be on or found in Apple Books. Please make sure you give us a big 5-star rating. Give us a big thumbs up that you're liking what we're putting out there, sharing what we're putting out there with all your friends and family. Please stay tuned for more information as it pertains to overcoming some of the myths and misconceptions that we have about health and how the human body works.